We remain standing for the reading of Scripture. We'll read from 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 8 through 10. Well, join me. Three times I appealed to the Lord about this, that it would leave me. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, and my power is made perfect in weakness. So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated.
We celebrate God's majesty on the mountaintops and draw upon God's strength in tragedy. But most of our life is spent somewhere in between the extremes. Our lives are filled with ordinary time, the day-to-day and the in-between. How can we live our in-between lives filled with God's power and presence? How do we find God in our day-to-day situations? How do we meet God in the ordinary?
Good evening. My name is Brandon Blackson. I'm one of the associate pastors here, and it's great to be with you. I'm excited. It's been a while since I've gotten to preach at one church, so I'm excited to share this message with you and glad to be with you. We've been spending the last few weeks talking about everyday faith, finding God in the ordinary. And a lot of times whenever we think of faith, we think of the really high mountaintop moments. We think of baptism. We think if you grow up in church, you think about your summer camp experiences. We think of confirmation and all of those kinds of things, maybe mission trips, going to serve in another country, all those really high experiences. Or we think about our worship, either Friday night or whenever you worship, but we think of those things, and those are really the things that make up our faith, and everything else is just in between. But what we actually believe is that God's with us every moment, that our faith doesn't just inform those kind of mile-high moments or the really low moments. It doesn't just inform the way that we worship. It informs every moment. And so we've been spending time talking about that, how we can find God in the ordinary moments where we spend most of our lives. And so we've been looking for the last couple of weeks at what that looks like. And so we've been talking about how that affects us. And so 2 weeks ago, John Vick came and he preached a great message on what it looks like to live out our faith at home, what it looks like to kind of live out our faith whenever we wake up in the morning, the way that we spend the first minutes of our day, the way that we spend our time doing all the things that you have to do just to keep a home, whether that's dishes, cleaning up, doing laundry, all of those repetitive tasks that over and over seem so unspiritual, and yet where God is with us. And so this was John's challenge. He challenged us to wash your dishes to the glory of God. Let the chores you do, the dishes you clean, the breakfasts you make be a response to the love of God and the love of people within your heart. So all those ordinary things that we do that you just have to do that we don't even really think about very much other than dreading them can actually be moments where we're living out our love of God and love of others. Last week, Andy shared with us how we can live out our faith at work, the place where many of us spend most of our time. And the challenge was not just to leave church on Friday, but to actually live that out all 7 days a week, to take that with us into our work, and not even just the really big stuff, but even the ordinary stuff, the emails that we send, the paperwork that we have to figure out, the more paperwork that we also have to fill out, and all of those things, all of those ordinary moments, those interactions we have with others are opportunities for us to be with God and to experience God's presence. And so this was Andy's challenge, to honor God through even the mundane parts of your work. So this week we're gonna keep going, and we're gonna look at something a little bit different. What we're gonna talk about is how do we find God in the moments when things don't go according to plan, and just those little hiccups that happen every day, and some of you, especially if you had little ones you had to bring with you, probably have happened multiple times since you walked through the doors, right? So the things don't go the way that we plan it, and you know, we like to have things in order, we like to be in control, we like for things to go the way that we want them to, and yet they so seldom do. You know, we all have little breakdowns in our daily lives. These moments when the plan that we had, the order that we like to keep, the way things were supposed to go just kind of breaks down, and it's not the way that it was supposed to go. You know, maybe that's misplacing something. It's time to walk out the door, and all of a sudden you realize you don't have your keys. Maybe it's you're trying to get someone out the door with you and they decide they don't like what they're wearing and they're not going to move a step until they get to wear that pink princess outfit that they can only wear in July because it's short sleeve. Maybe it's something at work, right? You know, that email that you sent a week ago so that important project that you're working on could move forward. You check and it's still in your drafts folder and no progress has been made. Those little things that can happen that most of the time in the scheme of things are not that big, but that can wreck our entire days and can cause us sometimes to behave toward others in a way that maybe if we were calmed down, if we were thinking about it, we wouldn't want to treat them. So the title of this sermon is The Parable of the Lost Keys. Don't go look for that in your Bible. It's not in there. I made it up. You'll be frustrated if you do, but this is the parable of the lost keys. Once there was a dad, and he woke up one morning, and that morning it was his responsibility to get his daughter ready for daycare and then to get to work. He had an important meeting that morning that he couldn't be late for, and so they got ready. They had breakfast, and then he got her dressed and went to get his stuff, and then he came back to her bedroom and found out she had taken off all the clothes that he had gotten her dressed with because that wasn't what she wanted to wear. And so he got her dressed a second time with some struggle. And after that, he didn't let her out of his sight again because he didn't want the same thing to happen. And finally, they got everything together and they were walking to the door and he felt in his pocket. He didn't have his keys. And so he started looking. He went to the most logical place. He went to the nightstand where sometimes he put them and they weren't there. And then he looked at every surface that might have been convenient for him to lie them down on. So he looked at the kitchen table, no luck. He looked at the coffee table. He looked at the dresser and his wife's dresser just in case, and it was in none of those places. And finally he realized, you know, I've got a small child who might have taken them. And so he said, I can't find my keys. Where did you put them? And she just looked at him like, what are you talking about? He said, come on, I know that you were playing with them. Where did you put my keys? And she said, Daddy, did you lose your keys? And he made a sound that could only be described as a growl. Like if you've ever heard a feral animal, it's kind of like that. And then he was desperate at this point, so he started looking in cabinets. Why keys would be in cabinets, he didn't know, but he was way beyond logic at this point. So he had opened them, and then when he was done, he wanted to make sure that they closed all the way. So he applied a little bit more force than was necessarily, strictly speaking, and went through the house and kept looking, and then he decided he was going to call his wife, that probably she was just picked him up and put them anywhere. And so he called, and she said hello, and he said, where are my keys? Where did you put them? And she said, that's an odd way to start a conversation. And he said, I'm late, I need my keys. And she said, I have no idea where your keys are, I have not touched them. And he didn't even wait for anything else, he hung up and went to the next thing. And finally he was just kind of throwing things around and there was a pile of stuff on the couch and he picked up a jacket and he threw it and he heard a jingle. And the jacket that he'd worn the night before, he walked over and reached his hand in his pocket and found his keys. Has that ever happened to any of you? It hasn't happened to me either. I've just heard of someone that had an experience like that. Okay, that exact thing has not happened to me, but I've come close a few times. You know, something goes wrong, and it's worse whenever you're in a hurry, right? You know, if one thing throws you off, then your patience, you just have very little to give. And so, you know, you react, and the people around you are the ones who really have to worry in those situations, right? And right, if anyone's there, like, you know, the kid who had no idea what he was talking about, like, where did you put my keys? We just kind of lose it. And whenever these breakdowns happen, and we respond in ways that we don't want to. We frequently take things out on people that don't deserve to be taken out on them, and we sometimes let things go that we wish that we could take back, and they're gone, and we can't. So I wonder, whenever those things happen to you, you know, whatever it is, whether it's something that's been misplaced by someone else, I'm sure, whether it's something at work that doesn't go the way it's supposed to, whether it's you have an important appointment and there was a wreck and you are stopped on the interstate and there's no going anywhere, whatever it is, whenever you encounter those breakdowns, how do you respond? How do you react? What is your response to that? Here's an example of what that might look like.
Sir, we were unable to acquire the droid on Jakku. It escaped capture aboard a stolen Corellian YT model freighter.
The droid stole a freighter?
Not exactly, sir. It had help. have no confirmation, but we believe FN-2187 may have helped in the escape.
So if you're ever with someone who reacts that way and they ask the question, anything else, you say no and get out of the room as quickly as possible, right? So thankfully, lightsabers are not readily available for most of us, so whenever those things go wrong, we're not tempted to do an impromptu renovation of whatever room we happen to be standing in. But sometimes things happen, and they don't go according to plan, and we just kind of react. We just kind of react and take it out on whoever or whatever is handy. And those breakdowns reveal things about ourselves that we prefer to deny, that we'd like other people not to know about, and sometimes we even would rather deny it and act like it's not true about us. We want to keep those things to ourselves. Sometimes whenever things go wrong, we realize that we have less patience than we thought we did. Sometimes we realize that we're prone to respond in anger whenever it's really not called for, or if anger is called for, then we let it control us more than we should. Sometimes we realize that we've got some work to do, and I think the thing that we really realize that we don't like to deal with is that we're not in control. Right? We like to be in control of our stuff, of the things we have going on. We like to imagine we have it all together, and if we just take care of our stuff, then everything will work out the way that we want it to. And how often does that work out that way? None of us is in control, right? I mean, so if you're under that illusion, I'm here to alleviate you of it tonight. You are not in control. You have some control, but ultimately things do not rest solely in your hands. If you're headed somewhere and there's a wreck and you're stuck in traffic and the car in front of you is stopped, you're probably not going anywhere. No matter how well you planned, that's out of your control. We just don't have the amount of control that we wish we did. And sometimes that's difficult for us to accept. And so these breakdowns reveal things, really things that we need to work on. Sometimes they reveal just our concept of reality needs adjustment. Sometimes they reveal areas within our hearts that we need to work on, that we need God's grace to heal us and to transform us. And these breakdowns are frustrating, though they make us angry, though they tempt us just to like lose it. They can also be moments where God's grace shines. And so that's what I hope you leave with tonight, because whether it's before you leave these doors or tomorrow before the next breakdown happens, it's going to happen. And you have a choice about the way that you respond to that. Sometimes we just skip right past the choice and move into kind of what's our reflex, but we have a choice there. We can work on that, and we can improve our lives. We can improve the way that we treat people around us. We can transform those moments so that they're not just moments where we don't let loose on somebody who happens to be standing by, but can actually be moments where we receive God's grace or God's actually working in us. So that's what I hope that you see tonight. So to talk about this, we're going to look at a situation in Paul's life where he was struggling. And so this comes from 2 Corinthians chapters 10 through 13. Those chapters are kind of a section unto themselves in that section, but Paul was writing to the church at Corinth, which is in modern-day Greece. This was a church that he had founded and continued to maintain close connections with, and he'd stayed in close communication with them. And so Paul started the church there, and then after he moved on to work with others we know of, and maybe more than that, depending on which scholars you're reading, but he wrote one letter that's lost, and then the second one that he wrote is what we know is 1 Corinthians, and then 2 Corinthians is another one after that. Some scholars even think that's two letters that were combined at some point early on, but so this was a community that he stayed in close contact with, that he visited multiple other times after he founded it, but it was also one like, you know, whenever the more you love someone, sometimes the more frustrating they are to you. Like, I think this was maybe the relationship that Paul had with the church at Corinth, because they had this habit of like he'd get them and work them into shape, and then he'd go away for a while, and they would just get out of shape. This kind of sounds like my exercise career lately, but But he would get them all ready and go away, and they'd fall into old habits. They'd fall into ways of living that were really not compatible with the kind of life that Christ had called them to live, with the kind of example that Christ set for us. And so he'd go back, and 1 Corinthians, if you read it, he's kind of mad at them at some point. And if you read 2 Corinthians, particularly chapters 10 through 13, he's not real happy about what's going on there. But what he's addressing is some people have come in, so he's left, and in his absence, other people have come in and have basically been kind of chipping away at his authority and contradicting some of his teaching. Now, we don't know exactly what that was. He doesn't spell out what it was, nothing that they haven't left any trace other than what Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians, but he refers to them as super apostles. That is, he did not mean that as a compliment, just so you're clear if you go back to read that. But basically, he thought they were kind of full of themselves, that they were kind of setting themselves up as great examples and tearing down what he was doing. So Paul set about to defend himself, not just because he was worried about his reputation, but because if his reputation fell, then he was also worried that the good news that he had shared with them, the message that he had shared, might also be replaced by something else. And so he began to, as a way of defending his message, defending himself. And so he started out kind of with his background. You know, they say that they're Hebrews, so am I. They say that they're descendants of Abraham, so am I. And then he goes on to talk about the suffering that he's had. This is in chapter 11, the suffering that he's had in order to proclaim the gospel. And so he talks about being whipped with lashes, about being beaten with rods, about having people throw stones at him, about being arrested, and all kinds of things that he'd suffered. At one point, he was in Damascus, and was even the authorities had surrounded him, and he had to be let down from a basket. So he doesn't specifically say this, but I think one of the things he sacrificed was his dignity to be lowered in a basket out a window. But he sacrificed all of these things for the sake of the gospel. And then he even goes on to talk about the things that God has revealed to him, that he was taken up into the third heaven. In the ancient world, it was kind of understood that, you know, they hadn't like gone to space yet, right, in the time of the Bible, right? We're on the same page there? Okay. And so they talked about, basically heaven, the place where God and the angels lived, was up. And so if you went up high enough, you'd go through the first heaven and then the second heaven, and then God lived in the third heaven. And so he said he was taken up into the third heaven, whether in spirit or body, only God knows. But while he had this experience, that God revealed to him things that no mortal knew and that no mortal could repeat, that he'd had this amazing experience. And so he's gone through and listed all of these things. Do you know what he used to conclude his argument? The way that he concluded his argument was by bragging about his weakness. Now, I don't know about you, but I took a public speaking class in college, and at no point whenever we were talking about persuasive speeches did we say, now, the way that you drive a point home is by talking about how weak you are, right? Anyone have a different experience than me? That's not how you convince people, and yet this is what Paul talks about, is that somehow this weakness that he experienced is proof of God's work in him. This is what he talks about, and he says, therefore, to keep me from being too elated, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from being too elated. Three times I appealed to the Lord about it. Times this thorn or stake in his flesh that he asked God three times to be removed. It wasn't something that God gave to him, but it was something that he asked to be removed. Now, most of us, I think, if you've heard this passage before, you're familiar with the translation of thorn, and you think, oh yeah, I've been scratched by a rose bush before, like that kind of hurts, that doesn't feel good. Another way that you can translate that is stake, S-T-A-K-E, just so we're clear there too. And not like a tent stake, but this was like the kind of like sharpened wood that you would dig a hole and put sharpened stakes in there and then try to disguise it so that your enemies in war might fall into it. And so this wasn't just like a little thing that he was talking about. I mean, this was like an instrument of torture. This is something that caused him serious pain. People have speculated for 2,000 years about what that might have been. Paul doesn't think that we need to know it, so I'm inclined to agree. But the point was, he had this suffering that was really challenging him, that was causing him to struggle. And so he asked God to remove it, but God didn't. Why? You know, only God knows. But this is how God responded to him. God said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. For power is made perfect in weakness. And God there is talking not about human power, but about God's power. Now, that's one of those paradoxical truths at the core of what it means to follow Christ, is that for some reason, something about the way that God works is that while we look for power in regular forms, in the forms that we're used to, whether it's political power, whether it's physical strength, whatever it is, God's power is actually made greater in weakness, in human weakness. And we see this most clearly at the cross. Right, if we were in Jesus' time and people saw that we had a cross on our space of worship, they would have thought we were crazy, because unless you were the person who was hanging people on it, the cross was a sign of terror, of shame, and defeat. And yet the cross is what God used in order to bring about victory, to show his power beyond all power. Because when Jesus died, whenever Jesus was the epitome of weakness, of helpless, hanging on the cross, whenever he died there, God used that to bring new life for us, to grant us salvation, to defeat sin and death and evil for all time. And then through his victory, by raising Jesus from the dead, God proved his power greater than any other power through this weakness, through the weakness of the cross. And it seems like foolishness to us today, but that's the way that God works. And so that was what Paul took home from that, is he realized that he didn't have to rely only on his own power, because God's power was actually made manifest through his weakness. And if he was able to allow his idea of strength to get out of the way, then God's power could shine forth all the more. And it's true for us too. Whenever we realize our own weakness, we can rely on God's strength. So often, I don't know about you, but I'm so caught up in trying to do everything myself and trying to just force things to be the way that I think they should be, that sometimes I don't have room for God to work. And so I think I have to do it all, and unless I'm just come to the point of not being able to do anything, I'm trying to do it all myself. And yet whenever we realize our weakness, whenever we realize our need, whenever we realize that we're not God, then God's strength can work inside of us. Because God's power is made perfect in weakness. So whenever you think about those ordinary little breakdowns that you have, maybe even the big ones, but we'll focus on the little ones, you know, whatever it is, just that little thing that happens that kind of throws your whole day off, remember that God's grace is enough for you. Yeah, you can't find your keys, and it would be really nice if you could, like, go to work so you could make a living, but even in that moment, God's grace is enough for you. Maybe you were talking to somebody at work and you said something you shouldn't have and it kind of threw everything off and you're not sure how that relationship is going to heal. God's grace is enough for you. Whenever you are in a situation of just being desperate and not knowing where help is going to come from, God's grace is enough for you. God's grace is always enough. Especially whenever we realize that power doesn't have to come from. Those little ordinary breakdowns in our lives can be opportunities to receive God's grace. They can be opportunities for us to receive that, to be transformed by it. And so sometimes whenever we're going through those situations, what we realize is I'm not strong enough not to go off on someone whenever I lose something and I'm in a hurry. And that can be an opportunity for us to accept, to say, God, I need your help. I need more patience so I don't blow up on my family every time this happens. God, heal me. Help me. Whenever those things happen, we realize that I am not the only person at work who can do anything that might be helpful, that can do anything right. Help me to rely on others and help me to rely on you. It can be an opportunity for us to realize other people have something to contribute as well. Sometimes it can even be a learning experience. God, if I would just do this one silly thing, like maybe I wouldn't put myself in this situation again. Like whenever I'm running late and I'm trying to get somewhere and I realize I don't have any gas and I have to stop and I'm going to be even later now, like maybe I could learn that you can also fill up your car the night before you have to go somewhere. Like God can teach us stuff like that. I know, it's amazing. You did not think it was going to get this profound tonight. And so one of those things that I've discovered, I'm a serial drop it wherever is convenient kind of person. And so whenever I come in the door, it's like, oh, there's a table, here go my keys. And oh, there's a couch, here's my jacket. I just kind of throw it wherever it goes. Well, a couple years ago, I went to a white elephant Christmas party. And And, you know, we brought our gifts, and it was one of those. I don't actually know what white elephant is, but I think this is what it was. But, you know, so you draw a gift, and then if you open it, and then if somebody else wants it, they can steal it. And if you haven't gone yet, you can steal from other people. And so I opened it, and I got this little silver dish, and it had a fishing pole on the side, and I think it's a largemouth bass jumping out of the water. And I thought, all right, what am I going to trade this for? And then I looked, and I thought, this would be a place where I can put my stuff. And so now I've got a dish that I put my keys in, and so now whenever I'm looking for my keys, they're in that dish at least 60% of the time. Right? These moments that usually get frustrating, like, we can learn from. God can work in. And so that's my hope for all of us. I hope that you take something for this more than just get a dish to put your keys in. Although if you need that, I recommend it. It's been great for me. But those moments of losing it, those moments of just having a breakdown of the things not going the way you want them to, they can be moments where God's grace shines. So here's some action steps. Here's how we can live this out this week. First, I want you to pay attention to the little breakdowns you experience and how you're tempted to respond to them. Sometimes this happens in the rearview mirror, and you're like, okay, this happened, and I responded this way, and temptation didn't even really enter into it because I just gave right in. Like, there wasn't even any resistance. That happens sometimes, right? But what are those situations that cause you to feel like things are breaking down and you're just losing control? What are they? So pay attention to them, because the first step is realizing what those are. Next, take time to review your day and confess your sins daily. That's one of the things that we realize is we fall short. And one of the chief places we fall short is whenever we feel stressed and we react to that. So sometimes these can reveal to us areas we need to ask God's forgiveness. Sometimes they also reveal to us areas we need to ask the forgiveness of others. And so looking back and reflecting on that, we can realize, God, I really messed up. I really needed your grace today. Forgive me. Heal me. Help me to do better tomorrow. And then finally, when breakdowns happen, take a breath and ask the power of Christ to dwell in you. You know, sometimes that breath can really make a difference, right? Just pausing before we react. Whenever we can take a moment, okay, I'm stressed, I'm looking for my keys, I have no idea where they are, and I'm about to take it out on my kid who has nothing to do with this. God, help me to realize it's not that big a deal and not to hurt others. Okay, God, I'm really stressed out at work. I have a deadline today, and I'm afraid I'm not going to hit it, and the person I share an office with also has nothing to do with that. Help me be kind to them. And so if we just pause, we can ask God to be in those moments, to give us power that's greater than what we have. And sometimes it's, God, this situation is bigger than I am. I'm powerless. Help me remember that. Help me rejoice in the fact that you are the one who has the power and it doesn't rest on me. So there was this dad, and he had to get out the door and get to work. He was also responsible for getting his kid to daycare. And so he got her fed, and 90% of the food ended up on the floor, and he stepped on the banana that he didn't see and had to change socks. And then he went and got her dressed, and that lasted for about 2 minutes until she found an outfit she liked better and couldn't reach, and so she didn't have any clothes on and was just reaching for the top shelf and having no luck. And finally he got her ready, and by that point they were already at least 5 minutes late. And they got to the door, and he realized, what did he realize? He didn't have his keys. And so he felt his shoulders rising and his hands tensing up. He took a breath. He started looking. He looked on his nightstand on that nice dish that he got for Christmas 1 year, and it wasn't there. He looked on all the other obvious places. He checked all the pockets, including jacket pockets, and still could not find them. And he thought, I've got a little kid. I bet she did something with it. He got down. He said, honey, I'm looking for my keys. Have you seen them? And she said, yes, I was playing driving last night. And he felt that same feeling coming up. And he took a breath. He said, okay, would you mind finding those for me? And she went. She opened the toy box and reached down to that dark corner that he never would have found even if he looked in the toy box. And she handed him his keys. And he started to say something that probably he would have regretted. And then he realized, my daughter's been watching me and wants to be like me. Thank you, God, for this gift. whenever we stop and ask God to dwell in us, those ordinary moments whenever we're just about to lose it, those little breakdowns can become moments of God's grace for us to realize that there's something much bigger going on, to realize that there's someone much more powerful working in our midst. Will you pray with me?